Showtime.
Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to the interview with your host, Venger Satanis, and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. I'm Beast Zeno, and this is my co-host, Venger Satanis. Venger, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good, as usual. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. So, that's better than my normal reply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we also have a special guest. We have Dark Fool on, which is pretty cool.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, we got used to you, or we got exposed to you, I guess, from YouTube, I guess, right?
That's right. Yep.
And, okay.
Right. Actually, if you want to throw up your YouTube URL so people can check you out, that'd be more than welcome.
Sure thing, man. YouTube.com/DARKF00L.
Okay. Also, if people want to go to our new YouTube channel, The Icker, you are probably displayed in, like, you know, our friends and, like, channels that you should be looking at and stuff like that. So it's easy to find you from our site, too. So, which is cool.
Absolutely. Now, I will be posting videos on the Icker as well, because
awesome.
I think that's a really good, really great idea you got going on there, Venger.
Cool. Thanks. Well, yeah, it was kind of a combo idea for Beast Zeno and me, and it just seemed like a natural progression. I mean, we've created these contacts and these friendships in this network on YouTube and other places, and, you know, why not bring it all together and have people, you know, do different things on the same channel and collaborate, you know, make it bigger than it is. That's,
yeah.
I don't know.
I'm actually a really big fan of that, so right with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I would like to expand stuff. I know Beast and I were both of the Sagittarius persuasion. And our main planet is Jupiter, and from what I've been told by people that know a hell of a lot more about astrology than I do, is that the planet Jupiter has a very expansive quality and force to it. And so people born under that influence are just naturally interested in expanding things and, you know, empire building, I guess. So.
Yeah, you know what? I think I might have a little bit of that inside myself as well. But yeah, I'm still a student. I'm playing catch up. I'm catching up on a lot of Aleister Crowley's work and trying to make sense out of all of it. So yeah, I understand you on that one to an extent.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, what is your astrological sign?
Virgo.
Okay. Virgo. Okay.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. One of my best friends is actually a Virgo, and he's very similar to you in character, so makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that's one of my best friends is too, and that's like, it's funny how signs will naturally gravitate towards each other, and then some will.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, and you know, what's funny too is that I get along really well with Sagittarius and the other fire signs. So yeah.
Yeah. Now, is Virgo an Earth sign? Is that?
Yes, it's an Earth sign.
Element? Okay, that's right.
Yep.
Okay.
So,
anyone that hears a small child struggling for his freedom, that's Nyarlathotep. locked away in Beastino's office that's trying to sacrifice him right now.
He's doing a pretty good job at it, too.
Yeah.
I've just had to save his life about 5 times in the last 20 seconds, so.
Hey, how old is he now? 3? Critical.
Yeah, he's 3, almost 3 and a half. He was born in January, and at the very beginning of the month. So as soon as we go into this next month, he'll be 3 and a half.
Cool. Cool. Yeah, that's an age where you have to be constantly vigilant, man.
Yeah, I know. It's keeping me healthy, that's for sure. I've had to less frequently visit the gym thanks to him.
Nah. Nice.
Running out for him and stuff. Now, your circumstances, Mr. Zeno, have changed recently. I know it's not really the topic at hand, but not on the ooze, we like to, you know, discuss and go into some personal details and things about us and our lives, what's going on. So, if you wouldn't mind.
Currently, Beast and I are in a very similar situation.
Okay.
Yeah, that we are. I'm currently homeless now. I am single, but I'm not homeless like sleeping in a cardboard box homeless. I'm just couch surfing.
Right.
So.
Yeah, same here. There are some nights where I'll be at other friends' houses, you know. I'll wake up and forget where I am, like, which house is this? Which day is this, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well being a father, unfortunately.
You'd be more than welcome to crash here at my place. But I know it's probably a long trek from Florida. And where do you hail from, Darkpool?
California. I'm in L.A.
Oh. Okay. Well, it's even farther hike for you then.
Yeah.
Yeah, not many people around Wisconsin. Most people seem to be centered either in Florida or California or the East Coast.
I've noticed that too. It's still spread out, but I like, how we're kind of peppered throughout. And it's like if we're ever in the neighborhood, you know, we have some place to stop by and say hello to somebody.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't travel as much as I should, but hopefully that'll change.
So, kind of, I guess, pushing forward a little bit. I thought we'd get a little bit of clarity as to how the show topic itself was decided upon here on the Ooze. This is actually a requested deal from one of the members of the Cthulhu Cult Forum. What I thought was really cool about it was just previously. Maybe 2 or 3 months ago, Darkpool, you were on a show with a similar topic?
Yeah. That show ended up not going as well as I had hoped, but it still hit a couple of good points. But yeah, it was about music and how music has influenced, not so much music influencing society, but how the topic of the show was kind of screwed up, was how music has influenced the occult, and I wanted to arrange that and say it was actually a little bit backwards. It was actually the occult that influenced music. But overall, music within the occult is like another tool, kind of like how the chalice is and the pentagram.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would agree entirely. Matter of fact, I would say that it's probably a deeper tool than the pentagram or the chalice.
I would agree. Oh, yeah.
Right. It's another language of communicating with other people. And it's so powerful that routinely, like in my day-to-day life, sometimes I kick myself. I'm like, why didn't I spend more time trying to hone my musical craft, such as it was back in the early days, and I'd probably be a lot better off getting laid a lot more and living on Eaton Street. So, why am I doing things the hard way? Why didn't I just focus on music.
Well, you know, for one thing, as far as the rock and roll lifestyle goes, there's almost no money in music until you actually make it, you know?
That's true.
So, as far as what you said as with music being a language, you're absolutely 100% correct. It's in fact, it's considered the universal language. Anybody who listens to a minor chord knows it's that, and anybody who listens to a major chord knows it's happy. So, you know, that translates cross culturally.
Yeah.
That actually that actually gives
feelings.
That was actually going to bring me to another point, actually, and you actually got to the heart of it before I was able to get there. I was going to mention that there's actually been a lot of scientific studies that have shown that different vibrational patterns unlock different chemical reactions inside of our brain, so it creates a different set of endorphins, too.
Absolutely. They did. There was actually an experiment. You can look it up on YouTube. I think it's called Cynetics. Don't quote me on that, but it was where they actually put certain frequencies and sounds and vibrations, and they put sand on top of the plate with the sound vibrating through the plate from the bottom, and the different frequencies created different geometrical patterns within the sand.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've seen that too somewhere. It sounds a lot like the kind of stuff they did with on that documentary. What the Bleep Do We Know about? Like,
oh yeah, I love that. Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Where like just like meditation, you know, can influence the size and shape and whatever coloration of. Like snowflakes or, you know, ice crystals.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
Yeah, music and vibration can do that too. So it's all about the understanding and defining and redefining and recreating reality. I think that's what all communications try to do. And I think music is especially adept at doing that. So that's another reason why it's so damn powerful.
Absolutely, and you know, the thing is, music branches out and goes into different styles, and you know, they all kind of interrelate. Like one style comes out of another style, and especially when you're talking like about rock music, you get a lot of philosophies that go into that, and the philosophies in and of itself. We were talking about mimetics on the last show that I was on. The philosophy can actually influence the sound of the music, and then of course that translates to affecting the individual who's listening.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, it's a two-way street. It's the listener, the audience that's influencing the artist, and vice versa. Maybe not instantly. You know, when you first hear a record or a CD or something like that, you know, the audience isn't like influencing the person who made it, like right away. But you know, given some time, like 6 months or a year or something, you know, that audience base will influence the artist himself. And
that's true. That's very true. I mean, musicians that make it big are a prime example of that.
Yeah, yeah. Have you guys either read? Either of you read the Marilyn Manson autobiography? Long Hard Road Out of Hell.
You know, I how should I say this? Manson lost a lot of. Well, personally, I mean, I have respect for the man. At the same time, I don't. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
I mean, I did not. To answer your question, I didn't read it. I read parts of it here and there from friends who were fans, and actually, you know, it's written by an author.
Neil Strauss.
Thank you, Neil Strauss. He's a really good author, and I have some of his other books. And he's really good.
Did you ever read The Game by Neil Strauss?
Yeah, I have that one.
Yeah, that's good. About his introduction in life as a pickup artist.
What was it you were gonna say about Long Hard Road Out of Hell?
Oh. Just that, like, Marilyn Manson, he's not the end all be all, and he's got a lot of flaws and stuff like that. But one thing that I'm very impressed by is that right from the get go, he realized that his, I guess, philosophical and musical potential he realized the possibilities, and he did whatever he could to further his goals and market himself and what he was doing.
And he was brilliant in that. He was very brilliant in that.
Exactly. So that alone, I think, you know, and it's somewhat humorous and kind of just disturbing on some level too. But for that alone, I think the book is probably well worth reading, you know. Maybe not if you despise them, but if you're kind of a fan.
Well, no, I don't. I don't exactly despise the man. See, what I disagree with was some of the stuff that he did. You know, some of his antics. Like, one of the biggest ones was when he threw out Scott Pachewski, aka Daisy Berkowitz.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy had a unique sound, and I thought that when Marilyn Manson threw him out, it was actually a combination of him and Twiggy Ramirez deciding to kick him out, but. When that happened, I was not too happy because he was a really good guitar player.
Yeah. Yeah, Marilyn Manson is kind of an egomaniac, and that might get in the way of the music. He's kind of a solo artist that needs people around because that's all he does is sing. So he can't just sing in a vacuum.
And at the same time, one of my favorite bands is Rammstein, and those guys stick together.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Having actually grown up on the scene when Marilyn Manson was coming up, as they started to get bigger, they began a tour of Florida, and the Ybor City was probably one of their most frequently stopped places. I mean, back when they were Marilyn Manson and the Spooky Kids.
The best era, man.
And I actually bounced at a little club called the Ritz Theater in Ybor City, and I got to see them a lot of times. And one of the things that I thought was really, really interesting about Marilyn Manson's whole philosophy was the shock, the manipulation of shock in conjunction with the music. I mean, I've watched him multiple times smash a glass bottle on the stage and cut his chest wide open and be bleeding throughout the concert. And that just seemed to, for some reason, I don't want to say infuriate, but it just kind of created this vibe throughout the whole scene that you just didn't find anywhere else at that time.
Right.
So,
yeah, I think he used shock to manipulate his audience. He did things. Yeah, in the book,
what,
you know, he writes about
what I like about Marilyn is that he did the same thing with. I mean, he balanced shock and business. You know what I mean? He was really good at both.
Yeah.
And one guy who I got into a while back was like it was D.G. Allen. Now that guy was like way off the wall.
Oh yeah.
I don't know too much about him, but what I have seen is, kind of shocks me, I guess.
Interesting. Yeah. You guys really have to...
I think we all know about that. Since he was kind of a force of theatrics and, like, dark fantasy and things like that and rock and roll. He fronted Black Sabbath for a while and then had some hits on his own, like Holy Diver and Rainbow in the Dark, stuff like that.
Speaking of which, did you guys hear about the Westboro Baptist Church planning on protesting his funeral?
Actually, yeah. Zandora LaVey posted something on her Facebook about that, and that's how I read about that. So what's your opinion on that?
I'm going to try to show up and support Dio.
You're going to show up?
No, I'm not going to help Westboro. I'm going to support Dio.
Yeah, right. So are these people, like, just trying to garner more publicity for their own church and their own ridiculous God and beliefs? Or do you think they really see Dio as some sort of demonic threat to humanity?
I think they want threats. They want war. I mean, they're a messed up group, but I think they're hating. It's a combination of the two. They're hating for attention, and they see a weird warped sense of retribution for quote unquote Dio's actions. Messed up.
Yeah. So in response, I know this is gonna jump into a larger sphere of a topic or whatever, but do you think that the war should be brought to them, or do you think they should just be, I mean, not specifically them, but people like them, that kind of Christian sect, do you think it's more important to ignore these people or confront them, but in a nonviolent way? Or do you think we should just, you know, if
well,
we
the,
can get away
the
with
most,
it, like, start
I
molding
think,
people
I think
down
most,
with machine guns?
I think the best thing that we could do, this is, you know, ideally, keep in mind, the best thing that everybody could do is ignore them. However, because they are the Westboro Baptist Church and reporters like to make money, they will flock to them for a story. So in a way, it's almost like unavoidable that they're going to be in the limelight just hating on everything. So, I mean, at this point, if the media gets involved, you know, why not push back? You know, and push back with something like, you know, like for example, if I were there, which I hope to be, I got a friend who's getting married at the same, you know, like, the next day, literally. So,
yeah.
So it's going to be hard to balance that out. I want to make it, but anyways, if I were there, I would say like, hey, I'm alive and I am a Satanist and I go against everything you stand for. Can you do it? Can you protest somebody who's alive and in your face right now?
Yeah. Well, hey, if you do and the cameras are on you, please mention the Cult of Cthulhu and what we're doing.
I will be a media whore like that. You betcha.
Okay, that'd be cool. We would appreciate that.
And Jason King and Satanic International. Yeah.
Awesome.
Myself.
There you go. What do you think? You know, what's your take on the Christians and their potential war against us and the left-hand path and everything that's cool in the world?
My honest take is there is no war against the left-hand path. They've got their hands full with the staunch atheists, so, you know, they can keep fighting with the non-believers and leave those of us that walk the darker corridors to get things done. I think I would go right with what Dark Fool made as a suggestion, and say that, you know, in opportunities like that, you just ignore them and realize that their true enemy is the non-believer, not us.
Yeah.
And that's who they're after.
Yeah, but then again, if you have us, you know, if you got somebody who can actually confront them on an ideological basis and destroy them, I'd say, because the media is going to get involved. Ultimately, if it were up to us, I'd say leave them alone. But, you know, when the media sees a story, they're going to amplify it tenfold, you know?
Yeah, I understand this, but this...
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I understand that the media is going to amplify it tenfold, but you have to realize that the sensationalism of it and then the lack of response on our part is going to generate a flux of interest as to figuring out why it is that we seem unaffected by this. And that's when you get into the intellectualism of it.
Interesting.
Do you think people are going to think about that?
Yeah,
like,
certainly.
I mean, because let's say, you know, let's say the, I don't know, the Scientologists or the Jehovah's Witness are against something like that too. Like they like Dio or something because he was a member at one time maybe. But the Scientologists and the Jehovah's Witnesses don't say anything about it. Like, are people, the bystanders, going to think like, oh, the Scientologists and the Jehovah's Witnesses aren't here or making a lot of noise about it? I wonder if they feel that they're above it all, and maybe I should check them out because they seem unaffected. I mean, I just don't see that.
That's not quite what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying that they're going to go, oh, I want to look into this to see why they're unaffected, but rather they're going to rally towards the squeaky wheel. You know, they're going to try to gain support, and in doing that, they're going to begin to look in depth into, you know, into what's going on our part so that they can maybe find something to throw at us. So it's kind of a...
Well, I mean, ultimately, like I said, ideally, the best thing to do is to ignore them and also do what, as a writer or as a musician or as an artist, do what you do best and create, you know, create some albums, you know, that have to do with left-hand path philosophy, you know, some albums that have to do with ideologies that people are not familiar with. You know, like even Anton LaVey was a musician, and he pushed a lot of stuff forward, you know, his own ideas on what should go into a ritual chamber.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, my ideal or idyllic vision, this is if I could get away with it, probably be just to kill all those people. because it takes so much time to, like, sort through things and, like, reason with people and, like, separate the people that can be reasoned with and can be talked down from their extremist beliefs that go against us. With the people that can't be reasoned with, and, you know, then there's all this time and energy that you could be focusing on cooler things, more productive things, but you're spending it on, like, re-education. And sometimes it won't even take, or people won't even understand it, even if they respect your beliefs. So I would, you know, if I could get away with it, I would target the people that were the most vocal and the most anti-us, and I would just destroy them. I would just,
Avenger, I feel where you're coming from on that one, and a twofold thing I would say kind of alongside with that statement is that, yeah, I mean, I've felt that for years against extremists, against people that pull these ridiculous stunts. But at the same time, what I've seen is more effective is a slow progress, like working behind the scenes, whether it's, you know, like being a preacher that decides to come out with literature that actually changes, like Wesley, you know, John Wesley, or Calvin, or something like that. You take the religion and just push it in another direction, you know, by working within, because it's always the people that are within those own faiths that end up pushing it in different directions.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you pretty much have to do that because, you know, we're not going to instantly be given a license to kill by the government or something. So, obviously, we have to do something besides just shoot everybody. But
and unfortunately, other people have an enemy that they see. They just attack and they band together.
Right. Although, all right. I just wanted to say that before, like, when I was more adolescent, like in high school, I would have wanted to kill those people out of, like, anger. But now, I would want to kill them because, sort of dispassionately, because I just see them as, like, weeds in the lawn. And, you know, we need a weed killer in order to make our lawn look good and, I don't know, sell our house or something, or just have a nice lawn, whatever. So...
Right, yeah, you need to weed the garden.
Because,
you need to, if it's a
like,
good thing to flourish, you need to have those things out of the way.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's for the benefit of humanity, really, that I would be doing this work. Just kind of like, basically, I guess I'm paraphrasing what Anton LaVey said, that if he was really a humanitarian, then he would probably be the most prolific mass murderer in human history. Which I think is very poignant and true, because humanity, you know, there's a lot of diseased people out there with shit going on in their mind that's all fucked up, and it's keeping man from evolving. And if we can just separate the wheat from the chaff and get rid of the chaff, I think mankind will be a lot better off. But
I hit a lot on these same points in the videos that I made about the satanic organizations.
Yeah.
My take here is, and maybe this is going to strike you guys a little bit different, but I believe that that kind of focus on something that, in my opinion, is less than us, it's akin to going out and slaughtering elephants just because they have the potential of hurting us. And it really is not going to make that much of a difference. There's that old expression, you know, that the Satanist is born, he's not made.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the natural distinction that happens between us. So to, you know, focus that kind of energy on something that's below us is it's the same thing as putting a magnifying glass on. Over ants and torturing them just for sheer pleasure. There's not really any productive gain to it, and you know, in the end, you can be trapped within a certain cycle of hatred, similar to what happens to people of extreme racism or sexism or
true.
Any form of fun. What's that?
What you said, very true, and what you said about, you know, shining a light on them, or shining a light like on an ant, that's a great analogy, because, like, I mean, the way I see it is, like, creating stuff, you know, whether it's art, whether it's, you know, literature, whether it's music, you're actually using the light within you, you know, to bring that out, and I think that's one of the best weapons you could have, because that's genuinely divine.
What about using the light inside of you to burn them? Like with the magnifying glass analogy.
Oh, well, like, you know, creating stuff. Like, for example, Dio created several albums. You know, it influenced many people, you know, touched them in many ways. And Westboro just hates on that. And it's like, which one had the greater influence?
Right. But don't you guys think that the whole ant or the elephant analogy... maybe it doesn't go far enough in realizing that that there are a lot of people, in fact, masses in general, that infect our culture and are a real threat to not only the left-hand path, but
absolutely,
but
absolutely, I agree.
Themselves.
I mean,
okay.
they are a threat to us, but at the same time, here we are on Blog Talk Radio. You know, here we are in literature. And here we are, you know, it's like they can hate all they want. They can't stop what's being produced out there, and they can't stop it from spreading. And eventually they're going to burn themselves out because they're going to be people within their own organizations that are saying, enough of this. This is ridiculous.
Right. It's a very slow process, though. I mean...
Oh, yes, trust me. I feel you there.
Yeah, I mean, in the 50s, we couldn't do the show for a number of reasons, but... now we can. I'm interested to know what's going to happen in the future, but I don't know if we can just slowly make progress without taking...
It's hard to sit idly by and watch this go down.
It is.
That's why I I would like to get more active. In fact, that's kind of why I do the things that I do here on the Ooze, you know, here on YouTube, or just kind of appear here and there, and
right.
Eventually I would like to get back into my music once I get my life back in order, you know what I mean?
What do you do musically?
The band, the kind of music that I want to create is kind of like, okay, you know, everything's gone in like a new age direction, you know, like Enigma and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what's emerged has been like metal, all forms of metal, like thrash metal, black metal, which is one of my favorites, specifically Emperor and Dimmu Borgir.
Mm-hmm.
What I would love to do is make like a Burzum, Dimmu Borgir meets Enigma type of thing. Like have like a new age, but send it in a dark direction.
Hmm. Okay. That sounds cool.
I can't wait. I'm excited to actually hear that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the kind of stuff that I want to do requires a lot of, how should I say, gear.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
So this is one of the reasons why I've always chosen to like use Fruity Loops Studios to create things, because then you don't actually need the physical equipment. But
exactly. And one of my favorites to come out, and you could probably see some of the videos on my YouTube channel, is was it Symphonic Choirs? You can actually program a choir to sing what it was you want it to use, you know, what it is you want them to say. And I was thinking about using that for the Enochian language.
Oh my God, that sounds very cool.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome. I would think that would...
In fact, you guys have inspired me. Maybe I might even do that for Lovecraftian stuff.
Yeah, there you go. That sounds good. It's amazing how many artists of the musical persuasion have been influenced by H.P. Lovecraft. And it's also amazing how many of those bands or projects or whatever are of the black and the death metal variety. I just got a CD in the mail, just some stickers and a T-shirt from this sort of, I guess, death metal band called Altar of Dagon.
Whoa.
While
cool.
It's not really my style of music, I appreciate, I appreciate the gift, and, eventually, probably the next couple of days, I'm going to take a picture or two of myself wearing the T-shirt and so they can promote it and things like that.
Awesome. Or put it on the Anchor, you know, as a video.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I definitely should. And in fact, I was, you know, I rarely do this, but the video I made yesterday, I just had a good feeling about it. And so I posted it up on YouTube without really closely looking more than a couple seconds in the beginning of it. It was really shaky,
oh.
And like half of my mouth was like gone throughout the shoot. And so I just made a new video, and I'm really trying to perfect or get closer to perfection with my videos. I know my video has a weak point. My writing is a lot better than my video making, let's say that.
Okay. Well, you know,
yeah,
kids, don't worry too much about video making. There's several flaws in mine, but you know, if you feel the need to like tighten some stuff up and do some editing, yeah, that's cool and all. But as far as YouTube goes, sometimes you know one of the best things you can do is just let it happen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So yeah, and because people put some interesting comments on, I'm not going to delete that video from yesterday, but I'll just let it stay. But yeah, I always want to try to do better. I used to play guitar, like junior high.
There you go.
School. I was thinking about buying a guitar again and just kind of playing around. I think the days of me thinking that I'm going to be in some really cool, popular band are over. But it's just cool making music.
Yeah.
So.
Do it for fun. Yeah, do it for the love and the enjoyment of it. Oh, and by the way.
Yeah.
I just remembered something. I remember a couple of shows you asked people, you know, what's your favorite H.P. Lovecraft novel?
Yeah.
Besides Cthulhu, which was just straight up badass, I mean, my favorite...
Call of Cthulhu?
The Call of Cthulhu, exactly. Besides that story, which was just badass, my favorite has been the music of Eric Zahn.
Ah, okay. Cool. Actually,
guy creates... Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, the H.P. Lovecraft scholar S.T. Yoshi. I think it was him, or might have been the Thomas Ligotti scholar Matt Cardine. They were talking about that particular story, the music of Eric Zahn, as kind of kind of the last story of the early period of Lovecraft, before he started getting into his more expansive, more Cthulhu mythos type stories.
Yeah.
And That's a very pivotal, like, powerful story. It's very personal. I mean, you can see a lot of Lovecraft
very,
in
yeah.
it. I don't know if you know, but Lovecraft is very, like, tone deaf. And
oh,
so
I did not know that.
He would hear things, and they wouldn't be. He would hear them in a way that wasn't quite the way they should have sounded. So I think he found it very hard to fully appreciate music and things like that that other people could appreciate, because to him it was just kind of skewed.
But interestingly enough, I mean, he understood it to a point of its potential and what it could do, like, you know, Eric Blum creating a portal into another dimension through his music.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, same thing with fine art, where he's painting, like, zombies.
That's one of the things I want to talk about is shamanism. So that, I mean, that's pretty much the core of shamanism, is repetitive sound and repetitive music. Same thing with tantras, you know, in the Eastern regions.
Yeah, yeah. Have you used that or experimented with that in your magical work, the whole shamanistic, you know, things like that?
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, the Goetia and the Enochian systems, they all do this repetitive chanting, and that repetitiveness just beats your mind into a different state of consciousness.
Right, I'm actually, I've been experimenting using different frequencies to channel different levels of consciousness myself, like, 528 megahertz or 440 megahertz or whatever it is. And I've had some pretty good successes. I don't know that, I can say that for sure there's a new science to work in in terms of magic, but I would definitely say that everything is completely different after having experimented with it, because, you realize there's a lot of potential, and you begin to also kind of look into the fact that, everything's a composite of some type of vibration. That vibration is what collects the matter together, so.
Yes. Yes. Speaking of which, have you guys, are you guys familiar with Austin Osman Spar?
Oh, yeah.
Fair,
yeah. Yeah, he's kind of a precursor to the chaos magic. He's like an English sorcerer, I think.
Yeah.
He
wrote a lot of good stuff,
like,
when it came to art and music in the occult.
Yeah, yeah. I've read very little of his actual writing. Mostly I've read about people that were writing about him.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
but
one of his greatest works I would recommend.
Okay.
So one of his greatest works I would recommend is Practical Sigil Magic. He talks about the uses of art and music. And actually, he said music when you use, sound and sentences and constructing sentences and phonetics together. That's actually one of the ways he put it as obtaining the quickest results.
Cool.
Hmm. So. This was Practical Chaos Magic, the book was?
Practical Sigil Magic.
Sigil Magic, okay. I'm looking right now in my little library because it sounds really familiar. Yeah, I've got it.
He's got another book called Gothkia or something that's pretty seminal or influential. Yeah, he's written a lot of stuff that has been pretty highly regarded by a lot of serious magicians and like that.
Hang on one second, guys.
Cool. Okay.
Ah. Oh, your tongue's just blew. Okay. All right. You there?
You still alive?
No.
Yep.
Yeah, he's still alive. Just making sure. His tongue's blue from drinking blue Kool-Aid, and I looked at it, and I didn't realize that his tongue was blue. I thought there was something in his mouth, so. I had to check in too. Oh, thank you.
Now, Venger, I have a question for you, dude.
Yeah.
You've probably started out. I'm assuming, if I'm wrong, but with like Levain rituals, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
What kind of music would you include in that?
I think the first consideration has to be aesthetic. Whatever you personally like or feel energized by or gravitate towards, that's probably one of your go-to things. For me, I guess it would be dark ambient, because I like that kind of music, and I think it's good background stuff. Things like Lull and Lustmord and Kerovnian, and there's just so many dark ambient projects out there.
Awesome.
Also, I think anything with drums, I think, is good. Because,
yeah.
Very rhythmic and primal. And actually, that reminds me of this Enochian ceremony that that we did during the second Cthulhu cults or Cthulhu convention last, not just this past Walpurgis Nacht, but the one before, 2009. And I was doing this very simple, like, rhythmic drum beat and this, like, tribal drum, just, beating it out with my hands. And the ceremony took a long time. It took so long that at one point time just seemed to lose its meaning. It felt like an hour and a half, but it was probably only, like, 25, 30 minutes.
That's one of the cool things. When it comes to shamanism and drumming like that, beating your state into consciousness, you lose track, you lose a sense of time.
Yeah, totally. So I'd say stuff like that.
That's one of the things that I used to do when I gravitated towards film scores. When I used that and incorporated that in my rituals, it was like I would use drums at certain parts, but then on other parts I would use music that kind of sustained, gave a, just kind of held time and space. Like there was implied time, but it wasn't exactly, like it wouldn't exactly be 4-4. It would just be like 4-4, wait for it. And it was like kind of like working with the emotions, and you lose track of that time.
Definitely. I'm a big fan of dark, ominous tones, which kind of goes hand in hand with dark ambient music. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I haven't seen that one.
Okay, I actually like that movie, even though it's kind of borderline, almost chick flick romantic comedy. But it's actually good and more geared towards guys, I think. But anyway, there's this guy, and he does musical score for like this TV show where it's supposed to be like dark, gritty cops hunting serial killers and stuff. And during this one scene, this guy is all depressed, and he's like, try to do like the dark ominous tones like you usually do. Like getting your penis cut off is a bad thing. Yeah, you kind of have to see the movie to know or to laugh, to get the full gist of the humor of what I'm saying. But anyway, good movie, and I don't know, this came into my mind because of the dark ominous tone. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, that's actually one of the things. When I went to music college, I studied film scoring.
Cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, and one of my my roommates actually was music therapy department, so he gave me a little bit of heads up on what was going on with that.
Cool.
Yep. That's one of the things I gravitated to when I was in my research, was film scores.
Cool. Did you learn a lot from that, or?
Well, I did actually. I did learn a lot from those courses, and how to work with like what scales, what chords went with certain emotions. And how you can utilize that in a scene in order to portray exactly what's going on. And there was actually a textbook that I had way back in the day. I mentioned a lot of this. I have a video called Music for the Ritual Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I mentioned in that was like how music can bring out like hidden themes, like stuff that is not said, the music can say it all. You know what I mean? In
mm-hmm.
fact,
right.
in one of the programs, they talk about how George Lucas brought Star Wars to the attention of people, and they used kind of like a rock soundtrack. And this was like for a test audience to see how they would react to it. And
yeah.
The audience actually laughed at Star Wars. And, you know, George Lucas was appalled. And he said, okay, you know, he brought in his friend John Williams. And John Williams not only changed the score and got the audience's reaction by doing a lot of classical work, but he actually, by doing that, and changed film scoring history and brought classical back into popular film.
Nice. That's cool.
Not to really switch up the subject too much, but I actually, I'm curious, and I know you've been real busy, Dark Fool, but have you had the opportunity to read the book In Search of the Miraculous yet?
No, I will. I will. That's on my list.
Okay. Chapter 14, about three-quarters of the way through it, starts to deal with a thing that Gurdjieff refers to as the law of octaves. And what he actually is talking about is this gradual development of a structure law of a seven-tone scale, with the eighth tone being the rising note, which brings
correct.
You into the next octave. And then he
mm-hmm.
explains that the actual intervals between them, that those are kind of a shock, so to speak, if that makes any sense to you. I was just curious if you had read it, because it'd be interesting to see, and I'm not as familiar with the laws in music as you would be, so I was interested to see what you thought of it. So.
I'm glad you brought that up, because actually, two things I want to say about that. One thing, back in the day, I did look into that, and there was another musician who created an entire different system of music based on the semitones between, you know, between notes, basically. Before, like, a C went to a C sharp, there were tones in between.
Interesting.
So there have been musicians that have expanded upon that. I wish I knew them offhand. I don't, unfortunately. I can find out, and maybe I'll put it in a video.
That would be awesome. I would actually love if you would just give your thoughts on Gurdjieff's reflection of the law of octaves. He explains within this that anybody who's familiar with the structuring of octaves would. Let me see if I can find. I'm trying to pull it up real quick to quote him exactly. I'm getting there, guys. Sorry, I'm talking faster than I'm reading, which is not the other way around. I normally can read a lot quicker.
While you're looking, one thing that I would like to say is that when it comes to music, I had a teacher back when that was a teacher not only in Berklee College of Music, but also in MIT. And she taught physics at MIT, and a lot of the students there, she was talking to them about some of the rules in music, and they were actually relating it to the laws of, you know, to, how should I say this? You know, they were actually relating rules in music to laws of physics and different species of counterpoint to how gravity moves.
Oh, cool.
And that's actually one thing that I definitely would like to do, is see how physics, you know, laws of physics relate to laws of music, and how both of them can relate to the Kabbalah.
Oh, yeah. I found this, and I want you to, I'm just going to read it to you. It's a couple of sentences long, but let me know what you think of this after you hear it. The intervals between mi and fa and between si and do, which cannot be filled by intensity of the energy of the process and operation, which require an outside shock to help, so to speak, connect by this very fact one process with other processes. From this, it follows that the law of octaves connects all processes of the universe, and to one who knows the scales of the passage and the laws of the structure of the octave, it presents the possibility of an exact cognition of everything and every phenomenon in its essential nature and of all of its interrelations with phenomena and things connected with it.
Right. Right. Well, the thing between me and Fa and Te and Do is that they want to resolve into the next.
Okay. They're
like, I mean, the whole thing about the way the Western system is set up is, well, I mean, obviously in music there's always tension and resolution, whether it's within different scale degrees or whether it's within chord progression. When it comes to... Yeah, like if you have... Okay, I'll give you a musical example. Let me see if I can hit it right now. Do, re, mi, fa. Mi goes to fa. So, you know, the strongest ones are 1-4-5 progressions. That's what the church would always use. Like, do, fa, sol, do. You know what I mean? And that was the strongest ones, and they would use that. And the thing that they would kick out... It's funny, the church would kick out the augmented fourth or the diminished fifth. Because of the tritone, it was too dark. It was a diminished chord. They called it Diablo in Musica.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But yeah, to answer your question, I'm going off track here, but to answer your question, yeah, the Western scale is set up so that you have tensions and you have resolution, and the biggest one is in Te and Do, like Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti. It wants to go back to Do.
So it, those are actually the point of rise, and that is correct, right?
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Now that makes a lot of sense to me. Then I thought I understood it, but again, you know, I'm kind of a secondhand musician in the fact that the only things that I really know about music are from other musicians. I've never actually studied it myself.
Mm-hmm. It's seriously a different world, man. It really is.
Right. I don't consider myself to be a musician at all, but rather a hobbyist with you know, an interest in it.
Yeah.
So, but we have about 2 minutes left, so.
Yeah. One thing I kind of wish we had been able to talk about more that I thought about before the show was. Basically listening to a piece of music that you had heard like at a different period in your life. Like maybe you listen to an album that you listened to like 8 or 10 years ago and it can bring you back to such and such a time, place. Like a whole remembrance of things past. Marcel Proust kind of, I think his big thing was the smell of, I don't know, flowers.
Yes, yeah. Well, the smell and sound actually bring up, those are the greatest ones that bring up memory.
Yeah, exactly.
And Anton LaVey, I believe, talked about this, same thing with Boyd Rice, about atavistic nostalgia.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, yeah, Austin, now I think about it, Spar, Austin Osmond Spar wrote about that too in Practical Sigil Magic.
Okay, cool. Well, that's probably another show for another time. But
okay.
Have you on, and
thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, if,
yeah,
is there
thanks, man.
Want to talk about or promote or mention before we go, Darkpool?
I will return to YouTube. I am on a bit of a hiatus, but I will be back, and I will be more active on the Occur.
Okay, cool, and hopefully call in again some Saturday, even if you're not the scheduled guest. You know, we like to talk to people, like to talk to our friends, and yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, it was a pleasure having you on. Thank you, Zeno, for co-hosting another awesome episode of Views, our Left Hand Path Talk Radio Show. And I'm out. I'm done.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.